Who's watching your home when you're not there?
It could be a burglar.
Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them.
Don't be an easy target for intruders.
Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844.
$99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers.
Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
Blog Talk Radio.
Finally in Columbia, South Carolina, at actually two theaters when it expanded release here recently. As I talked last week, there was no on the Columbia wasn't even on the list, at least the initial list that was circulating there for a while. But it did open up here, and I was able to get a ticket online. Went and saw the evening show there at here in downtown in. And I tell you, I am was quite pleased, very pleased with the film. Right off the bat, I would say the most unique thing about this movie is probably the adaptation of the movie, the screenplay. It's probably the closest adaptation of a book into a film that I know of. It's pretty close to what's in the book. There may be a few details. Couple of shockers in the book that that stand out that we've read about. Obviously, we talk so much about the scene with the baby being skewed on the and we talked about that. That's not in. That's a real obviously big shocker in the book, but probably just wouldn't be able to make it on the screen. Actually, I know it was actually shot by Hillcoat, the director, but at the last minute. Was taken out, and I think I've talked about this before. You probably may see that scene down the road in a different on a DVD version. As far as the adaptation, it was probably the closest thing. As I was watching the film, it was pretty darn close to as you're reading the book. There's a few little details and such when they find the train that's not really in the movie. I think what you see as far, because you can only put so much in a film. In the movie, it streamlines at least the journey itself that the boy, the man, the father and the son are taking to the coast. You still get all the essence of the danger and what they're facing, and also the total desolation and total post-apocalyptic setting, the nature of the story, You see that in the film, and it's quite clear that you see as you're following the movie, the dangers are there. As I said, just some of the details that obviously in any book, you're going to get so much more details as you read through a book, on a particular story that on a timeline just ain't going to work in a movie. But I wanted to really start off this review with The Road, just to say that the adaptation that Penhall put to paper to pen, the screenplay of this, is awesome. And if there's an award, Oscar award or for an adaptation, from book to screen, he definitely should be nominated, if not wins for that. The setting, as far as I've seen so many of these post-apocalyptic movies. Generally, they're usually shot, some abandoned junkyard or, factory or such and such. And, usually they put, a strew out, abandoned cars and such. And, to give you that feel of the post-apocalypse. But in this movie, it's totally, you could tell the decisions to film some of this in New Orleans and along Mount St. Helens in Washington and around the Pittsburgh area in Pennsylvania were great choices. The people who went out and looked for the shots, the sets, did an incredible job because the New Orleans shots, you know where they're at, but the scenes where they're walking through the abandoned towns, and they use the New Orleans kind of the backdrop. It's incredible. I don't want to get too much into the 2004, the Hurricane Katrina and the aftermath of New Orleans, but you can't buy that type of background in the setting, and it works so well in the movie because there's no mistaking what you see on the screen, and these aren't sets put in a studio in some large studio, and they've created this environment. These environments exist, and all they did was maybe throw some trash and such and scattered this and there, but those backdrops, the homes, the abandoned homes, and the you can't make believe, the dead plant life and the weeds and such, it really works really well. It's an awesome choice that they made as far as where they filmed it, especially around in Pennsylvania. You get this as the book you're reading, you get this obviously very describe of this very cold, very inhospitable world, and you get that feeling as soon as the film starts, as they show the father and the son. The father, obviously, Viggo Mortensen, and the son, played by Cody Smith McPhee, both great, awesome. Right off the bat, Viggo Mortensen, Oscar nominee. I'll put this down right now. I swear. I can't think of any other actor or any other movie where I've seen one actor put as much into one film. The look, the feel, he grabbed on to this role, and you can tell he didn't hold back. His visuals, the look of him, the decrepitation of his, the body is his body, his tone, the way he walks, the way he acts. It's definitely the best I've ever seen, the best period. And if he doesn't get a nomination for the Oscar, I just don't see, I haven't seen some of the other movies that some of these movies that they're talking about, and maybe they are great. I'm not putting down any of those, but I know what I saw last Friday, and Viggo Mortensen definitely went over and beyond what most actors do in a movie, and I just think he was incredible. Cody Smith McPhee, the boy, great, awesome. I know some people said they thought that maybe he was a whiner. Maybe they, obviously they didn't read some of the books. Some of the people that commented I've seen online, I've seen a lot of movies with children in them. It didn't work, and I've come out of the film thinking same thing. I mean, just, you know, they just really didn't need to put a kid in, especially a lot of some of the Steven Spielberg movies, Jurassic Park and such, where they put the kids in. It just doesn't work sometimes. And, you know, in this particular movie, I mean, he doesn't hold back. He doesn't whine. It's not the such at all. I thought he did an incredible job. He really embodied the role as the child, as the boy. I don't see anything wrong at all as far as his role. I thought he was great. You know, I would nominate him too for supporting role or Oscar. But you know, obviously the standout for me is Viggo Mortensen, the man, hands down, definitely Oscar nominee. Excuse me. Let's just start off with the. Pull together here. The film begins with the boy and the man. There's a lot of, in the beginning of the movie, some flashbacks, and you see a very sharp contrast between what the past was and the pre-apocalypse or whatever the cataclysm is, and the post-cataclysm or the post-apocalypse. Handled it basically at the very beginning was he let the man kind of tell the story as far as the sheer light in the sky and the low concussions. So even in the movie, you really don't know what happened. And then the sounds of the screaming, you know, people, you know, running around in the hills in the background, and the total calamity and the breakdown of human civilization, society. You know, it's all talked about, narrated there at the beginning. So, you know, even, you know, I thought that was good because unless you had read the book and understood what must have happened that was so cataclysmic, so awful, and what transpired after the apocalypse, you don't really understand how far down the humans or people have really devolved into. And he sets that up at the very beginning, so you know that the people that are left after there are really, I mean, just either, you know, either totally messed up or they're just either totally evil. You know, it's just, there's no law, no rule. It's, you know, animal kingdom, it's animal rules. I mean, it's just, you know that whatever they're going to encounter later in the movie, it's going to be, you know, tremendously, you know, they're facing some, you know, some real adversity. But the way he sets it up, I thought it was great. The initially, also, the main difference that a lot of people have talked about is the difference in the book and in the movie is the wife, played by Charlize Theron. She does an awesome job. I mean, almost she only has like 10 minutes of the movie. Her 10 minutes are really profound. They really set up also the beginning of the movie because, you know, argument initially with her husband about having the child. She doesn't want to have the child, but he, you know, encourages her to have the child, the boy, and they do. And then later on, you just see her go from okay, we can do this to you know, I'm out of here. And that's basically in the book. It's kind of somewhat like that. You know, she kills herself. In the movie, she just goes off at the middle of the night. And you just obviously assume that when she does that, you know, she's ended her life, or you know, she's out of here. And that kind of in the movie, it also helps out set that up because it sets up a timeline. Because initially, at least as far as the movie goes, once she's out of there and she decides to leave them, the father and son, you see, quickly decide at that moment that they've got to get out of where they're at. They cannot survive wherever they're living at the moment, which I believe is somewhere in Tennessee or in that area in the hills, maybe Nashville, Knoxville, whatnot. But anyhow, you know that at that point he decides that they've got to go to the coast, and that's where, you know, the story, you know, starts, and then you know, as a journey, you know, so most of the movie from there is really their encounter with the people that they run into. But the homes, the buildings, as I said, the settings, the backdrops. The one critical thing I thought was really awesome was You know, the gray sky they showed, the trees, I guess they filmed that part of what around Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania, but there was some of this done in Mount St. Helens up in Washington where a lot of dead tree remnants are there. And when the dead trees start falling and you start seeing all of that, and the magnitude of the death of trees, I mean, the forests are just completely dead, and you see that in the film, and you realize that, I mean, it's not just a, you know, this is just a post-apocalyptic set or just, you know, the end of the world, and just you kind of feel that it is pretty total. And that's what he's trying to, I think, transfer as far as when you see the trees, because in the book, there's anecdotal evidence continuously from the father when the boy asks him about other regions or areas or this, and that there's always this negativity for the father in the book that, you know, this is dead, this is over. There's just, there's really, you know, there's no place over the rainbow. I mean, it's just, so you just constantly get the sense, at least from the book, that even though they're making this journey to the coast and you're hoping there's hope, that there's something better, life or better there, you know that in the book, it also, it's just, you know, there's something, you know, it's pretty total. Now, in the movie, as I said, with the trees, the way it's set up, as you get the sense from all the dead trees and everything, that you see it visually. You know, in the book, you're reading about it, and you're visualizing it as you're reading it yourself, and you get kind of this, you know, vision of the world. But when you see it like Hillcoat did and put it on the screen, it really, you know, magnifies, and it really, you know, you really see how total, you know, things are. It's just, as I said, the most inhospitable post-apocalyptic movie that's ever, you know, been written about and definitely put on the film. Now, as they journey down the road, they run in also, obviously, into some of the bad guys, I guess. And, you know, nothing, remember, in the book and in the movie, there's no real center protagonist. There's no evil person that you can put a, you know, pin a, you know, a ribbon on. You know, that's the bad, that's the guy you get. You know, they're everywhere. The people that are still alive, you know, there's only a few, I would say, good people. They're just, you know, trying to survive. The rest of them are out there. They're hunting for other humans to eat, basically, or kill, or do whatever nefarious activities they want. So, you know, as they're going down the road, they run into certain bands, and you see the book and, I'm sorry, in the movie. And as I said, this is a great adaptation. The scene with the cellars there, the mansion, is very close to what I envisioned when I read in the book. A lot of the jackknife truck on the bridge, that's in the movie. You see that. The only things I was trying to think here, I guess, the only thing I will agree with some of the critics is probably is the pacing of the movie. There is moments where you wonder, maybe they drew this particular scene was a little drawn out a little longer. Maybe, you know, they could have tightened that up a little bit. Maybe they could have, you know, just went, you know, over to the next shot or something. You know, I'll leave that for the experts. It's just, you know, it's my own, you know, amateur feel of what I, you know, when I go see movies, you know, I kind of like it to go smoothly. You know, I like it to see, you know, go from one shot or one piece scene to another. And I did get the feeling that some of them were kind of delayed, or at least it didn't move as quickly as I would have expected, or at least had wanted it to. But with that said, as the movie proceeds down the road, you see the boy and the son. You know, the boy obviously seeing, you know, the old man that he's in there. Robert Duvall, let me just say this, was his 5 minutes in the movie, or probably, well, first of all, if you didn't know it was Robert Duvall, you probably would say, well, that's not Robert Duvall. He looks exactly in the book as this destitute old man, broken down, but his, as he sits down and talks with the man, excuse me, talks with the man in the sun, that's probably one of the most memorable moments. 5 minutes you definitely will remember, or you know, not, you know, one of the excuse me, get some drink here, because like I said, I did have a little cold here. Hold on a second. All right. The old man, Rob Duvall, the 5 minutes that he plays, he sits down, really exemplifies as far as what you see is the old man is kind of reminiscing about the old days before the apocalypse. I guess if I had to sum it up, that 5 minutes of the scene, in some ways it's kind of religious because, you know, he talks about God. He talks about, you know, could God, how could God do this to man, you know, I mean, so there's a real it kind of, you know, religious kind of philological, you know, discussion almost about what has happened. And you know, I think there was, he kind of says basically, if there is a God, I mean, what kind of tricks could he be playing, you know, on earth or on humans? I mean, it's just, and that's kind of the essence of those 5 minutes. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, you know, how they have that conversation. And that's not unusual in a lot of post-apocalyptic movies or books. Religion does play a lot of roles in these stories. And that's probably, those 5 minutes probably exemplified as far as the religious aspect of thinking of what has happened. You know, but like I said, Robert Duvall, he plays just an awesome role. I mean, his eyes, it's just the look. I mean, gosh almighty, I would imagine, I can't see how they put him in that role and put all, I don't know, you know, I can't say it was makeup, but whatever they did to him, it just, you know, he looked pretty sad, and he was supposed to. And obviously, you know, in the book, the son, the boy has this, you know, wants to help the old man all the time. That's one thing about in the movie, the father continuously reinforces with the son is survival. And that is, you can trust only, you can't trust nobody. I don't care how they look or how good they look, you know, talk. You don't trust nobody. You continue to dodge, you know, anybody that's out there, you know, you don't make confrontations with anybody if you can't, if you don't have to. And he has to do that because, you know, by in the movie that the man knows he's dying, and he knows at some point, very soon, that boy's going to be alone. And if that boy doesn't have those initial instincts or those, you know, taught to, you know, that he has to survive on his own by, you know, evading people and not trusting people, but at the same time not losing that fire, as they talk about that fire, the goodness and the benevolence of the boy, because he's constantly, you know, and you get this in the book and it transitions in the movie. The boy pretty much carries the remnants of what, you know, the goodness of humanity, and that's about the what it boils down to, at least as I see it. And his that essence of his of the goodness of man, and how he's towards other people, it conflicts with his the survival training or survival aspects of what the father is trying to teach him. So those come and, you know, and that makes it, you know, pretty interesting also how those two things try to balance each other. You know, the other thing is basically, They run into the thief later on in the movie. That's in there. That's a pretty dramatic scene. Matter of fact, I would say that the scene in the movie probably did what when I read the book, and I've read it a couple times, and I thought that scene in the book, I mean, I'm sorry, in the movie, played by Michael K. Williams, was excellent. Matter of fact, it was. It had a little bit more impact, I thought, than the book did. Excuse me. Oh boy, I tell you, these colds can be something. All right, now the only thing I had issue with, or not, I won't say issue. The only things that I saw that weren't obvious, that weren't really in the book, was the scene with a woman and a boy running from a band of people. I won't go into too much. I won't spoil that for you, but that was in there. The most profound difference, when I say profound difference, was that the boy found a live beetle when he was looking pulling something in the rubble. And in the book, as you go from the beginning to the end, as I said before, you're reinforced by the father about how total the devastation is. You never get to see any life. You're totally left at the end of that book that it is all dead. At least what you have seen and what you understand about the road and the world around the road. It is all dead. The animals, the plants, there's nothing alive. In the movie, it's a little different in the essence that Hilco puts a... And that's another thing in the movie. The movie is a somewhat little more feel good, a little bit more hope, a little bit more, you know, you get the feeling that maybe not things aren't going to be back to normal, but things that that survivability is a little bit, you know, that the survivability is actually a little, you know, better off as far as in the film because there's a lot. They find a live beetle, and the live beetle means that if there's one beetle, there's another beetle. It's just like bugs. Find one cockroach, there's another cockroach. If there's one beetle, there's probably thousands, millions of other bugs. If there's insects or bugs, there's food. You can eat bugs, and that was one of the things that was in the movie. It wasn't in the book, and that was towards the end of the movie. So you get the feeling when you see the beetle and the beetle flies off that life is not really total. So that was a big, profound difference, and it also changes the feeling what the movie was and what the book ended as. The book, you know, he eventually does run into the veteran after the man dies. And in the book, you kind of have a feeling, well, at least he's going to be all right. He's going to continue. He's going to move on. In the film, he meets the veteran, and you also get that essence feel, too. But it also kind of leaves a little more hope, a little bit more good feeling. And I think that was on purpose to make the movie not as grim and as bleak as the book was. So that was the only two things. Like I said, the beetle, which is a profound difference, and there was a scene with the woman and the boy. But other than that, everything else was pretty darn good as far as the adaptation. The cinematography for it, like I said, the settings is excellent. I thought Nick Cave's musical score was excellent. I know some people are down on that, and some people say the timing. I'm not an expert on timing on the music, but it was great for me. I thought it was fine. I saw nothing wrong with it. I thought it was a great original score, and I would commend that. I think Hilco did a great job. I think, like I said before, maybe the pacing could have gone a little bit quicker on certain scenes, but overall it was great. I think Viggo Mortensen is definitely an Oscar, that's for sure. All the cast, as far as the actors, and obviously there weren't, you know, Viggo Mortensen, the boy, Cody, Charlize Theron, Michael Williams is the thief, Guy Pearce is the wandering, you know, veteran, and Robert Duvall. All of those people I just named were excellent. I mean, above average than what you normally see on any other film. Viggo Mortensen probably took it even up a couple notches than the others, although they were all great. It was a great movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was, like I said, a great adaptation. It's a great movie to watch. A kind of a father-son type movie in which you see a father express so much love and so much energy as far as focused on surviving and keeping his son not only surviving but also keeping the good essence, you know, his immorality in this most, you know, the worst and difficult time. So, as I said, I thought it was great. I would definitely recommend it. I had no reservations about it. I think it's great. I hope you will enjoy it. I hope you'll go out there and see it during the Christmas holidays. I appreciate you listening. This is going to about do it for this segment this week. Doubt I'll do a show for next week here in between Christmas and New Year's. I'll come back probably. It'll be on January 5th of the week of the first week there or second week there in January. So look for the Aftermath show there. Obviously, we're going into January, and we'll be talking about the Book of Eli with Denzel Washington. Again, I appreciate you for listening to the show. I hope you check out the road yourself. This is your host, Will Coy. You have a great day. Bells on bobtails ring.
making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing the bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells rock. Jingle bells chime and jingle bells time. Dancing and prancing and jingle bells swear. In the frost.
Can we do it one more time, guys?
Here we go. We're rolling.
What a bright time. It's the right time to rock the night away. Jingle bell time. It's a swell time to go riding in a one-horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse. Pick up your feet. Jingle around the clock.
Jingle bell time.
Come on now. Jingle bell time. Jingle bell time.